Ray Perini, you know him well. Ran as a candidate for the Suffolk County District Attorney spot, one of the great attorneys Long Island has ever seen, no question. 17, the career beyond belief. Prosecutor, Brooklyn, Suffolk DA office, 27 years, criminal defense attorney. What can you say? 45 years in the post. And it's been way too long, folks. And by popular demand, a fan favorite on the LI and the AM program, the aforementioned Raymond Perini. Sir, good to have you.
Good.
You've been away way too long, way too long.
Well, I'm just glad everybody's healthy. The show is going on, and I'm really very pleased to be back. Thanks for having me.
It is always great to have the dulcet tones of Ray Perini. You know, there's so much to talk to you about in the legal sense. You know, I'll go with the latest story, and that's this William Spencer deal, Ray. Lawmaker, 18th District, doctor, well-known, respected doctor, a minister on the panel. The one that hurts so much is a panelist for the opioid and the heroin situation in Suffolk County, right on the panel there. And lo and behold, it seems like he's living a double life, you know, trading some pills for sex in a parking lot. So I'll tell you, it's a hurtful story to so many. You know, it's almost as if, how low can you go here? The Sarge said in the crime report about an hour ago or so, Joe Jacklone, you know, it's just a very tough story here, Raymond.
You know what it is? Look, the longer I do this, I get to the point where nothing shocks me. But if there is any defense to this case, he has to get his message out now, because this is damning. And, you know, he's talking about his life being over. I've represented doctors. If any of this is true, he's never going to practice medicine again. He's going to substantial risk of jail because he really let everybody down. Being a doctor, being on the opioid task force, you know, there are some things you just don't come back from in politics. I think back in the 50s, there was a politician whose line was, don't get caught with a dead hooker or a little boy. And their career ends. So I don't know where this man goes. I know he had a great reputation. That's why it's such a shock. People really thought he was a good doctor and a good legislator. And he does. As you said, he was leading a double life. And it's now going to destroy his life.
Something that caught my attention when he walked out of the court the other day, somebody had asked him a question, were you targeted? And he gave a nod to that question, whoever asked the question. He might have been targeted by task forces galore here, but the fact of the matter is, you know, you're preying on an individual who is thriving on drugs for the trade-off of favors for your own self. And, you know, it's tough to defend if that's true. I mean, the depravity of another human being on an addiction type of situation in order for it to get a trade-off, the courts do not like that at all, right? I mean, judges just forget it. When that happens, we've seen it. We saw that guy in Sound Beach and everything else working out of his parents' basement, Ray. That was a tough case. That was going on for a long time. Again, you know, you're working on an addiction, that depravity of another human being there. That's not a good situation.
You know, that's why, look, if there's something there, if there is a defense, if there is a targeting, and I assume by that he meant politically, you have to get that message out right away. Quite frankly, I don't see it. I think DEA was doing their job. They had, you know, an overdose. Woman died. Went through a phone. Picked it up. And, you know, and they did what they had to do. If you have a doctor doing this for sex, you have to stop it. It's wrong. You know, there's got to be punishment here.
There's no doubt. He stepped down from a couple of posts here. And, you know, not a lot of legislators wanting to talk about this right now, but you know, listen, it is what it is. This is very serious stuff, and really, you know, it's not good for the county as well. It's really terrible. with all that's going on within Suffolk County right now, it's the last thing is they needed a William Spencer to be meeting a woman to swap oxycodone for sex. I mean, come on. It doesn't get worse than that, I'll tell you that much. But I'll tell you one thing. It does not look good if you're trying to defend this guy. You know, they got him with the goods. What are you gonna possibly defend his stuff?
It's a tough case. If that's the case, you go in there and you put him in treatment and you try and explain it away as a social disorder. I sound like something out of West Side Story now, but, but like I said, if he has some argument, he's got to get it out there.
Any possible argument you could have, with all your experience and everything else being on both sides, Ray, I mean, what possible defense could you have here?
You know what? I can't see one. It seems to me if the phone is what is, if what the press conference is what it is, and sometimes press conferences get exaggerated. We saw that in the Sunderman case, but, let's say he stood up there and said he signed his own pay, literally signed his own paycheck. That just wasn't true. And that'll come out. But in this case, this is you have the phone, you have the text messages. He showed up. The other problem he has is he had that gun on him. I know he had a carry permit, but was he coming to and from work or not? That could be the next shoe that drops. But this is a tough one. This is one way you go on the mercy of the court unless you really have something substantial.
Yep, no question. Top of the hour, you're listening to Ray Perini, Perini Erga, the great firm, 45 years, defense attorney, criminal prosecuting attorney. He's done it all. Ray, let's move to the Murphy case. The individual who got in his car drunk, playing around the golf over at Swan Lake, killed the 12-year-old, this Andrew McMorris, tough case. Back and forth, and Fernando Camacho taking a stand. You know, there was some talk of some inappropriate type situations happening there with the jury, discussions taking place before they actually should have taken place. I thought the beat goes on, and thus Tom Murphy gets a sentence there. Listen, we had Steve Politi on this show. We had the attorney representing Murphy. We had the attorney from the other side representing the McMorrises, John Elisa. We had John Elisa on this show. The fact of the matter is I thought Camacho did the right thing because, this thing has been stretched way too long. This is all happening, by the way, 2 years to the day almost, 2018 in September. So Camacho, I thought, did the right thing, even though Politi thought, it's completely out of line. He thought Camacho was. In your estimation, did Politi have, he's a good lawyer. He's trying to find a loophole. He's trying to get his client off the hook. I mean, that's first and foremost. But you kind of like the way Camacho went about the business because it gives closure to this family hurting beyond belief here. What was your take?
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve Politi he fought as hard as any lawyer could fight. I've been on both sides of those jury issues. When I was, chief of narcotics, they would attack a verdict based on jury misconduct, and I've actually brought that allegation. Camacho was correct. It has to go right to the heart of the verdict. It has to be an outside influence. The fact that they're going to talk about what color tie he was wearing or this guy didn't speak well or I thought he was a fool, those are passing comments. They don't infect the jury deliberation, and that's what you need. You need somebody to get in there and say, well, I went to the scene, and I saw this, and I saw that, and that's uncross-examined testimony in the jury room. They didn't have that. But I can't fault Steve at all for fighting as hard as he did. Because in this case, for Murphy, it's probably a life sentence. It's a death case, and you do everything you can to protect your client, and I give him credit for that. But Judge Camacho is an interesting guy who doesn't take a lot of nonsense, who controls his courtroom, and he tries to get to the meat of the issue and decide it quickly. And this case took a long time, but at the end of the day, I think he's correct.
Yeah, and listen, Politi was telling us, listen, the guy's a large man. Listen, I don't care if you grill a monsoon. Quite frankly, if you test what he did hours after the fact, okay, let's keep in mind, he didn't take that BAC test right then and there, Ray. He waited a couple of hours and still tested high, okay? So, you know, he still was inebriated to the point where it was in his system. So can you imagine what it would have been as far as being tested right then and there? I mean, come on. I mean, that's a sign to me. Not only that, they have videos slurring his words he did. And, you know, the whole thing was a disaster. Listen, what can you say? A 12-year-old is dead. These poor parents have to go through the rest of their lives. They get some closure, thank goodness. And Murphy, let's face it, you should have gotten your car drunk. And I find a lot of fault with those three guys, too, Ray. You can't let somebody take the keys and go in a car and drive off knowing the guy's been drinking. I'm sorry. I don't care how many drinks he had. Okay? Alcohol affects human beings in different ways. Alcohol affects people in different ways, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, no, you know, this is one of those. These cases are tragedies on both sides. I mean, you know, Murphy wasn't out robbing banks and killing people deliberately, but getting behind the wheel once he's had his vodkas, I think he was drinking. You know, he crosses a line and he has to pay the penalty. But it was a hard-fought case. I think the government did a good job. They stuck to the issues, and I feel very bad for the family. I mean, burying a 12-year-old, I can't imagine doing that. And I understand that had to be so painful for them.
Yeah. Ray Perini with us, a couple of more. I guess a federal judge now will have a hearing in December to determine if these corruption convictions. Ray was with me every step of the way, did a great job on the case regarding Ed Mangano and his wife. But I guess they'll have a hearing to see if Mangano and Linda would be overturned, the conviction, because of these claims that a key witness, government witness in the case, lied. Talking about Harinder Singh, Ray, on the stand. Here we go again with trying to unravel this. Do you think anything will come about of this? I mean, did Harinder Singh lie? I mean, to me, it's way too much on the side as far as wrongdoing, as far as how the county executive conducted himself. You know? I mean, the door and the chair and the watches and the job of $450K for Linda hardly showing up for anything. I mean, come on. I mean, there's too much in that column as far as the Mangano wrongdoing is concerned. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the judge really was put in a position where she had no choice. It's classic. You have a guy swearing in two different forums, telling two different stories. So he's lying somewhere. So now they have to determine whether he was lying at the trial or lying at the civil proceeding. But remember, the first trial, the government made a mistake and they relied too much on Singh. They wanted you to believe him. Second trial, they put him up on the stand and then they corroborated everything he said. So at the end of the day, unless he said he made everything up and, you know, they may get a new trial, but I think the second trial, the government did what they had to do. They didn't rely on Singh. They didn't try and sell him as an honest broker. He's a man who'd do anything to stay out of jail. But this is what happened, and here's how we prove it. And then they went through all the other witnesses. So I think the court had no choice but to grant this hearing. But I think at the end of the day that the government's going to prevail, only because of the way they tried that second case.
And let's face it, there's still $20 million in indirect loan guarantees that Mangano pressured folks. Officials in the town of Oyster Bay, that looms large. And I'll tell you, the one kicker in for me is these veal parmesan sandwiches. You know what? When you get a veal parmesan sandwich from a restaurateur like Mr. Singh, look out. That's a special sandwich, and that's just one of those deals to get that favor. Now, listen, one more thing. You know, this Shannon Gilbert and the tapes, I know you're following it. John Ray, he's been out there pressuring the department to release these tapes. The courts kind of agree. Listen, listen, what's on these tapes? Put the tapes out there. Stop playing in this tug-of-war game here. My God, this is going on 10 years. You know, we got a piece of evidence with the belt and everything else, the WHHM initials in the woods. You know, at some point, there's got to be a revelation of what exactly is on this tape. Shannon Gilbert making the call running from that C. Peter Hackett house back up there. Ray, what's your take here?
I think the tape should be disclosed only because they've investigated this so long and so hard, and they haven't gotten the break they need. Maybe there's something on that tape when it becomes public that'll trigger a memory or guilt somebody into coming forward. I don't see a downside anymore because this has been going on too long. Now, again, I don't know if they have something going on where that could jeopardize them, but I think a court has to take a look at this. And if unless there really is an investigative angle for not doing it, that tape should be public.
No doubt. And let's see what happens. Mr. Perini, it is always a pleasure. 45 years in the business like no one else. Brenny Erger, the great law firm. And we look forward to the next time. And let's not have this much of a gap. How's that between appearances, sir?
Jay, I'm a phone call away. How's that? And it's good to be back.
You're back. We'll talk soon. The great Ray Perini.